Restoring a healthy vaginal environment will be our next chapter in this saga, and Christina Musny is going to talk to us. And Christina is an assistant professor in the Division of Infectious Diseases at the University of Alabama in Birmingham. Please, Christina.
Good morning, everyone. That's going to be a tough act to follow. All right, so I do have a few disclosures for this talk. I have two federally funded grants studying the pathogenesis of incident BV. So my outline for this talk today, I'm going to remind everyone that the epidemiology of BV favors that of sexual transmission. I would love just to do a talk about that. It would be an interesting and controversial discussion. I'm going to review current treatment strategies for BV based on the 2015 CDC STD treatment guidelines. And then I want to spend the majority of the talk talking about BV being a biofilm community and going through some of the data talking about the BV biofilm and some agents that people are looking into to disrupt the biofilm as part of treatment. And I'm going to end talking about partner treatment trials, treating the male sexual partner of women with recurrent BV, other novel BV treatment options that are coming down the pipeline, and then next steps for this field of research. And so I probably don't need to go through all this. I'm just going to review it very briefly, but BV is the most common cause of vaginal discharge in women. The most recent NHANES data analysis showed that approximately one-third of U.S. women had a history of BV. It's associated with multiple adverse reproductive outcomes, including preterm birth, low birth weight, postoperative GYN infections, and as we heard, increased risk of acquisition and transmission of HIV and sexually transmitted infections. It is characterized by depletion of the protective lactobacilli and increases in a large number of organisms, including facultative and strict anaerobes, including Gardnerella vaginalis. We hear about all these other bugs, adipobium, BVAB1, BVAB2, et cetera. And as I mentioned, the epidemiology of BV does support that of sexual transmission. However, the pathogenesis still remains controversial. We talk about this all the time. There's some people that think that BV may be caused by one STD pathogen, that's the Keystone pathogen. However, there's other people that think it may be caused by a polymicrobial consortium of sexually transmitted organisms. I think the jury is still out on that topic. So you've seen this slide many times during this conference, the diagnosis of BV. We diagnose it clinically every day in the STD clinic and other settings based on the AMCEL criteria. And you need 3 out of 4 of these criteria for the diagnosis. I will mention that the clue cell is one of the AMCEL criteria, and that's a squamous epithelial cell that's covered with all of these different anaerobic bacteria. We look at these clue cells also through Nugent scoring and looking at different morphotypes on the vaginal gram stain. This is done mainly in research settings and not in the clinic. And so a Nugent score of 0 to 3, which you can see on the top picture to the right, is consistent with a lactobacillus predominant optimal vaginal flora. The intermediate flora is a Nugent score of 4 to 6, and that's consistent with emergence of Gardnerella vaginalis on the slide and decreasing amounts of lactobacilli. And then a score of 7 to 10 shows disappearance of the lactobacilli with Gardnerella and numerous other strict anaerobes. There are other ways to diagnose BV. David Fredericks and others have talked about these yesterday in the debate. Including the BV blue assay and molecular diagnostics. So currently we have multiple treatments for BV recommended. I'm sure we've all used a lot of these treatments. Metronidazole, 500 milligrams orally twice daily for 7 days. Also recommended is 0.75% metronidazole gel intravaginally for 5 days, or clindamycin cream 2% intravaginally for 7 days. We do have several alternative treatments to nitazole and then oral clindamycin and then clindamycin ovules. So despite all of these currently available and recommended treatments, unfortunately, BV recurrence is common. And this has been shown in a large number of studies, one of which I have mentioned here by Jack Sobel and colleagues at Wayne State University. And this study followed women who had an episode of BV. They followed them for 28 weeks after treating them with oral metronidazole. They had a group of women in the study that they gave suppressive metronidazole intravaginal gel twice weekly during this 28 weeks of the study, and then they had a placebo group that just got a vehicle gel. And as you can see in both groups, actually, BV recurrence was high. It was much higher at 75% in the placebo group, but still relatively high in the treatment group at 51% at 28 weeks. So more recently, over the past 10 years, BV has been found to be this biofilm community. And this is a picture of the BV biofilm from a female patient with BV that we took here in our lab. And I'm going to go into more detail about this BV biofilm for the majority of my talk. And I just thought it would be important to review the process of biofilm formation before I really get into the BV biofilm. Biofilms are seen in a lot of infectious diseases, and so interestingly, the pathogenesis of the biofilms themselves are pretty similar. They just involve different organisms and different types of infections. And so characteristically, there's planktonic free-floating bacteria that decide to adhere to a surface. In the case of BV, it would be the vaginal epithelium. And these bacteria decide to adhere to a surface based on what they perceive to be a good protective environment for them. So it may be something that is providing them nutrients or some sort of safe haven for them to colonize. And so once a few of these planktonic bacteria start to adhere, they go into this monolayer that starts to produce an extracellular matrix, or what's called slime. This continues to build up. We hear about slime. So this continues to build up into a microcolony with multiple layering cells that continues to grow into a mature mushroom-shaped biofilm. And this has got a big round of the polysaccharide or extracellular matrix surrounding it. This is where the BV biofilm, or any biofilm bacteria, really get into their happy state. They slow down their metabolism, and they're just kind of sleepy but safe in this environment. It is important to note that a few of the bacteria on the outsides of the biofilm can detach and revert to a planktonic growth. But then when they get out of the biofilm, they then get at risk for being out into the harsh environment. It's also in the biofilm that this quorum sensing is going on between the bacterial cells, and that's the bacterial crosstalk between the cells where they crosstalk to each other to help keep their environment safe and help keep each other supported. And that becomes important later on as we think about new treatment options. So adherent biofilms in BV was first discovered by Alexander Swazinski in 2005. He's a German investigator. And he discovered this by performing fluorescent in situ hybridization on vaginal biopsies of 20 women with BV and 40 controls. He used a broad range of bacterial group-specific rRNA-targeted probes in his study. And he found that a dense bacterial biofilm was present on at least 50% of intact epithelial surfaces in 90% of the women with BV, but only 10% of the controls. And this was statistically significant. He also found that the biofilm was mainly composed of Gardnerella vaginalis, which had the overwhelming majority of the biofilm mass, followed by this organism Adipobium, and then much, much lower proportion of Lactobacillus species. All of the other bacterial biofilm organisms that he found with his probes, he found to be irregularly intermixed and showed no specific patterns of occurrence or spatial organization. So he took this original study to the next step and started to look at female and male sexual partners and also control groups. And so he published a paper on Gardnerella biofilm involves females and males and is sexually transmitted. And in this study, instead of doing vaginal biopsy specimens from women, he took urine specimens from women, which had desquamated squamous epithelial cells in the specimens. He also took urine from these women's male sexual partners, and then a group of healthy controls, and again used fish in this study. He found that Gardnerella was in dispersed or the planktonic forms, and also the cohesive form, which is the biofilm. And in the cohesive form, the Gardnerella biofilm was again attached to epithelial cells in groups of highly concentrated bacteria. It was present in all of the women with BV in this study and their male sexual partners, but was not present in healthy controls. And interestingly, he also was able to follow the transmission of a cohesive Gardnerella strain over retrospectively over a 15-year time period between a husband, his current wife, and a wife that he had divorced 15 years prior. I'm not exactly sure why he was interested in this one couple, but he made a big point of discussing it in his paper. I wonder how he's involved in that. Just kidding. just kidding. I have no information on that. So these are pictures from this study. The picture on the left shows the dispersed Gardnerella. You can see two tiny, I don't know if you can see it in the back, but you can see two tiny little yellow lit up Gardnerella planktonic organisms. And then on the right, you can see the cohesive Gardnerella all adhering to a squamous epithelial cell. And that's part of the biofilm. And so there were some other investigators that actually took this to the next step and wanted to really hone in on the cohesive Gardnerella and the planktonic Gardnerellas and see which one is more resistant to H2O2 or lactic acid. And these are substances that are normally produced by vaginal lactobacilli in an attempt to keep the optimal vaginal flora maintained. And so these investigators used an in vitro model for Gardnerella vaginalis biofilm formation, and they looked at the susceptibilities of the cohesive and the planktonic Gardnerella to these substances. They found that the Gardnerella biofilms tolerated a 5-fold and 4 to 8-fold higher concentration of these substances than the planktonic cultures. And they also showed that proteolytic dissolution of the biofilm increased the susceptibility of Gardnerella to these substances. And so this study showed that biofilm formation contributes to Gardnerella vaginalis survival, and biofilm disruption resensitizes otherwise resistant biofilm-associated pathogens. And this was consistent with biofilm resistance as a phenotypic phenomenon and has important implications in BV treatment. And so what is the role of the biofilm in BV recurrence? We see recurrence happening very commonly. And it's now thought that BV recurrence is so common because it's a resurgence of this biofilm that has not been completely eradicated by our current treatments. And so this has actually been shown in another study to occur after metronidazole cessation, and the resurgence of the biofilm again primarily consisted of Gardnerella and adipobium. And this has led some to say that women who have inadequately treated biofilms have a carrier state for BV. In contrast, in vitro resistance to metronidazole therapy itself has been found to be rare. And I just want to mention that these biofilms in general have a lot of known mechanisms to resistance to antibiotics, which we need to be aware of when we're thinking about new BV therapies. And I have them all listed here. This can include slow or incomplete penetrations of antibiotics through the slime, phenotypic changes in the biofilm cells similar to spore formation, quorum sensing, which I've already mentioned, expression of efflux pups, which can kick antibiotics out of the biofilm, and then persister cells that are able to survive in the biofilm in the presence of an antibiotic. And so because confronted with a low efficacy of metronidazole and other antibiotics for eradicating this BV biofilm, investigators have looked to new options for BV treatment. And so I'm going to mention a few preliminary studies that have been conducted over the past 10 years looking at new alternative treatment options. This one is one of the first, again done by Alexander Swazinski, and he actually picked a different oral antibiotic, moxifloxacin, that has a good anaerobic activity. So he basically gave this antibiotic to 20 women with BV for 5 days. He looked at changes in the occurrence and proportions of all of our typical organisms, assessed again using fish. He showed initially 15 out of the 20 women in the study had a good clinical response for their BV based on AMSEL and Nugent criteria. However, 10 to 12 weeks after therapy, the Gardnerella biofilm was again present in 40% of these women and not due to newly acquired disease. So similar to metronidazole, moxifloxacin suppressed the adherent bacteria in the biofilm but did not eradicate them. Jackie Sobel has started looking at intravaginal boric acid. I know a lot of you may have heard about this medication used to treat vulvovaginal candidiasis and trichomoniasis in recalcitrant cases, and so now we're looking into it being used in bacterial vaginosis. And so he did a study several years ago, which was a non-randomized retrospective chart review of 58 women with recurrent BV. He gave them initially 7 days of a nitrimetazole, which could be metronidazole or tinidazole, followed by a 21-day course of boric acid, and then metronidazole gel twice weekly for 16 weeks. You can see the cumulative proportion of cures I have listed here were actually pretty good, similar to other studies. However, failure rate was still high, 50% at 36 weeks. So he had no adverse reactions noted by the patients to boric acid in this study, and it was a low cost, but he feels like this was a retrospective study, and his study design precluded objective evaluation of boric acid contribution, and a randomized controlled trial incorporating it into treatment is needed. One other study that was recently done was a study about DNase inhibition, and it is known that the Gardnerella vaginalis biofilm secretes extracellular DNA, and this helps maintain its structural integrity of the biofilm. And so it's thought that if you give a proteolytic DNase, that you may be able to lyse some of this extracellular DNA and help get rid of the biofilm. And so a very nice study by Adam Ratner and colleagues was done in a murine model looking at this. And they gave, in their model, they used different concentrations of metronidazole and different concentrations of the DNase. And they found at very high concentrations of both of these agents, biofilm disruption was not obtained in many of their models. However, when they gave moderate doses of both, they had an additive effect causing more biofilm disruption. So this is something to look at in the future. The last study I wanted to mention about this is another study done by Alexander Swazinski. He's looked at another intravaginal agent for perhaps disrupting the BV biofilm called octinidine. This agent has actually been used in other biofilm infections and infectious disease, such as oral biofilm infections, orthopedic hardware infections, and then chronic wound infections. And so it does have some precedence in other infectious diseases, so he wanted to try it out in women with recurrent BV. So he had 24 patients in this study. He gave them 7 days of intravaginal preparation of this. And then again, he gave 28 more days if women were still having BV recurrence, and then weekly for 60 days. Again, similar to a lot of other studies, his initial cure rate was high. However, relapse was still high as well, 66%. And he found that 37.5% of the bacterial organisms in the biofilms developed resistance quickly to this medication. So sort of to end, I wanted to mention about male partner treatment trials. We have heard that BV recurrence after treatment may also, instead, in addition to resurgence of the biofilm, may also be due to acquiring a new infection from an untreated sexual partner, as males are known to carry BV-associated bacteria in their genital area. So 5 out of 6 prior male partner treatment trials in the early 1980s and 1990s, however, did not report a statistically significant beneficial effect of male partner treatment. There was a very nice systematic review on this topic a couple years ago in the STD Journal by Maida et al., and she basically showed that these trials had significant methodological flaws and needed to be repeated in the current era, taking into account all of these design errors, many of which I have listed here on the slide. And so there is one trial going on in the United States right now of a randomized controlled trial of treatment of the male sexual partner of women with recurrent BV. We're actually doing the study right now at UAB with Jane Schwepke and also Jackie Sobel at Wayne State University. It's a study to look to have regular male sexual partners of women with recurrent BV. We're randomizing them to either a placebo or 7 days of metronidazole. The primary outcome is to determine if treatment of these male partners significantly decreases the recurrence rate in the female. We've enrolled 75 couples to date and are going to be looking forward to seeing the results of the study in the coming years. The last thing I want to mention are other novel BV treatment options coming through the pipeline, which are all one-day regimens. It's also thought that women adherence to 7 days of metronidazole may not be optimal, and this could also be contributing to BV recurrence. And so these are all one-dose regimens. The first is metronidazole vaginal gel at 1.3%. This is a higher dose than what is currently recommended by the CDC, which is a 0.75% dose. This is found to be a convenient single-dose regimen with similar efficacy as multi-dose regimens. The last two were just presented at the 2016 Infectious Disease Society of Gynecology Conference last month in Annapolis. That's secnidazole, a 2-gram oral dose, which has a longer half-life than metronidazole, and also single-dose clindamycin phosphate vaginal cream 2%, or Clindes cream. These have both been found to have similar efficacy to multi-dose regimens and well-tolerated by patients. So my last slide is about next steps for the field. We definitely need novel strategies to eliminate the biofilm in women with recurrent BV. I've showed you several treatment options that investigators have been trying. We haven't had a lot of success to date, but we have a long way to go, and there's a lot of excitement in the field about this. People are talking about using more potent biofilm inhibitors than what I've described to you today, including retrocycline, which is an inhibitor of Gardnerella vaginalis, vaginolysin, or other naturally occurring antimicrobials. In addition, we need agents to inhibit quorum sensing. Also, we need female partner treatment trials of women who have sex with women with recurrent BV, clinical trials involving the use of topical antimicrobials in addition to oral agents in men to eradicate cutaneous carriage of BV-associated bacteria. And then I did not talk at all today due to time about probiotics, but I do want you to know that there is a Lactobacillus crispatus capsule that's currently under study in women with recurrent BV. So we'll be waiting the results of that as well. And so I just want to thank my STD research team at UAB. Jane Schwepke has been a wonderful mentor to me over the years. Also, the vaginal microbiome research team that I work with at UAB, in addition to the LSU vaginal microbiome research team, and our nurses at the STD clinic, two of which are here, Sarah Lynn and Angela, and I told them I would mention their names. I want to thank everyone for all of their collaboration and help over the years. Thank you.
Christina, that was really terrific. We have time for some questions, and while we're waiting for people to come to the mic, I'll just say, I think the Swidzinski work is very provocative and interesting. My problem with his body of work is that there are never any controls, and I have no idea who these women are, how they're selected, and where the heck they come from. So I think it's interesting, but I'm very, very cautious about over-interpreting those studies. The other thing I'll say is that we're also studying a boric acid disruptor in the STI clinical trials group. That trial is underway, and we're about a quarter enrolled, so very exciting. Other comments or questions for that fantastic overview? Probably one of the most current, up-to-date discussions of treatment I've heard in a long time, so fantastic. Steve totally wowed them. Okay.